Shane McMahon gets a double dose of the stunner, Daniel Bryan says nothing, and Randy Orton moves front and center as Kofi's next opponent. Your SmackDown Live review starts right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast on this SmackDown Live review show that, as I'm recording it, it is Wednesday, July 17th, 2019, the heart of summer, hot as hell here up in New York, and hopefully it is nice where you are, and thank you for joining me, and we are going to break down SmackDown Live piece by piece and grind it down into a fine powder. But before I do that, I want to, of course, welcome you to the show and all of the new listeners as well. This is a show that's by a fan for fans, and I really do believe that. I don't think it's just a tagline. It is for fans by a fan, not by a WWE employee. Despite what my name of the show says, this is a completely independent show and no agenda. This is not state-run radio. This is completely independent of that. So just want to get that out there. I've had a lot of questions on that lately. So, but again, guys, thank you for joining me, and if you can't get enough of this show, well, tomorrow you're also in luck, because I am going to be doing a show with my co-host Ashley, and we're going to be discussing everything that has gone on this week in WWE, including Extreme Rules, Raw, SmackDown, Bray Wyatt's return, Kevin Owens getting stunner happy. All of it is going to be discussed with Ashley, and I'm looking forward to it. We typically have much longer shows for the Thursday shows, so if you like long-form audio, boy, you guys are in for a treat, because Thursdays are typically the longer shows with all my co-hosts. All of them I just have great chemistry with and could talk wrestling for hours. And literally, we do talk for hours. So you'll enjoy it if you like such things. And speaking of things that you'll like, check out the website at WWEpodcast.com. All this content is there. And some opinion pieces that are on there that I think are very well written and well thought out, and are done several times per week. So I highly recommend that you check that out as well. And also, if you don't like the ads on the show and you want an ad-free experience, no problem. You go to patreon.com/WWE podcast, and for $1, you can get all of my shows, every one of them, commercial and ad free. Yeah. So, and it's just one easy payment of $1 a month. That's right. An easy payment. My wife has me watching QVC too much. They always have the easy payment schedule, right? For, I don't know. They're doing Christmas in July right now, and they're, I don't know, selling Christmas trees and stockings and ornaments, all this stuff. And they always have the easy payment option. As if that the word easy is supposed to alleviate the pain of your price. So If they labeled it something else, is there such thing as a hard payment? You know, I think all payments are hard. So if they're just supposed to give us an easy payment, what makes it easier? I mean, really? Okay, I'm going off the rails, but just one of my rants on completely non-wrestling topics. Okay, let's get into SmackDown Live, which, again, just like Raw, I thought was a very solid show. There are things moving. It was wrestling centered, which I liked. It was just very concise, easy to follow for the most part. We got a lot of character development, and particularly Liv Morgan, who, after her loss to Charlotte, went up to Corey Graves and ripped the headset off of him and said that Charlotte's right, and that she's coming back real. And what I think that means is that she's going to be taking away the gimmicky stuff, the blue tongue or whatever she has, and the pink hair and all that. I think that she says that she's going to be coming back more real. And that's fine. That's fine. I haven't seen enough of Liv Morgan to really make a decision on whether or not she has a very bright future. But I'm willing to give it a chance. She was used, just like the rest of the Riot Squad, as sacrificial lambs on the road to WrestleMania for Becky Lynch and Charlotte and Ronda Rousey, who destroyed them on a weekly basis, if you remember. Her and Sarah Logan and Ruby Riott all got demolished week after week after week leading up to that triple threat main event for WrestleMania. So the fact that they're trying to reinvent Liv Morgan is a good thing. I was not a fan of them using the Riot Squad in the method that they did. I know that there were greater goods that they were trying to serve and to focus on. I understand that. But when you sacrifice them on a weekly basis and in dominant fashion, it really, really hurt all three members of the Riot Squad. So now Liv Morgan seems to be on a different course after her loss to Charlotte. And I'm all for it. I'm all for it to see exactly how she comes back as, quote, real. So, but probably beyond Liv Morgan, there were larger items, news items from SmackDown Live. And the number one has to be Shane McMahon and Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens gets to the arena. Shane has security waiting for him. And basically tells Kevin Owens he has the night off with the local wrestlers acting as security guards. Anybody else, can't you tell that they're not legitimate security? I know they're really not, but can't you just tell they have that local wrestler look, don't they? They look like your typical high school gymnasium wrestler. And no disrespect. They are busting their ass to get to WWE. But they just seem to all have that feel. Anytime there's that, quote, security, crack security staff, they just have the local feel, don't they? I don't know. Okay. But so Kevin Owens gets the night off, which you know isn't going to end up being a night off for him. But one little thing I had with this, one little issue is, Shane McMahon took a stunner last week, and Shane isn't irate or trying to attack Kevin Owens yet. He didn't even mention the fact that he physically attacked him last week. He just said that you can have the night off. But if you attack Shane McMahon, you attack any McMahon, you think they're just going to give you the night off? Wouldn't they put you in like a 3-on-1 handicap match? Or stack the odds against you in some form or fashion instead of just allowing you to just have the night off? I guess the punishment didn't fit the crime, especially when you look at the McMahon's terms of punishment over the last 20 years. That's not one of them. That is not one of them, especially when you physically attack a McMahon. So Kevin Owens comes back, interrupts the town hall at the conclusion, gives Shane another stunner, and then darts off again. And Shane is coughing. And apparently that's what a stunner does, is make you cough now. And then is irate backstage, and it ends with the final match of Ziggler and Kevin Owens, who is miraculously tracked down. And boy, WWE really rolled the dice. If this was supposed to be a true rivalry or true match for the main event, they really rolled the dice by putting that graphic up and having Ziggler walking to the ring when they didn't even confirm they got a hold of Kevin Owens to confirm he's on his way back to compete in the match. But I'm nitpicking. So we get the match. It's an 8 to 10 minute match. And you see Shane McMahon come out with all of his crony heel wrestlers that for some reason are on his side and have beef with Kevin Owens. And Kevin Owens hits the stunner on Dolph. Referee gets to two. Shane pulls Kevin out. Kevin delivers a second stunner to Shane McMahon on the outside of the ring. I don't even think Stone Cold ever did that. And then sprints up the ramp. And you have Shane McMahon selling, coughing more and more and more. And then he is being consoled by Drew McIntyre, saying that, you know, he won the battle, but you're going to win the war. So A few thoughts on this. Number one, I like what they're doing with Kevin Owens. Here's the good stuff. I like what they're doing with Kevin Owens. I like that they are starting and ending with him. That tells you that he is your main focus. Whoever begins and ends the show is the main focus of that particular show. So Kevin Owens is getting a legitimate shot here. I think that he has very good crowd support right now. I don't think it's overwhelmingly positive in terms of getting that big, massive pop. But when Kevin Owens has been a heel for so long and misbooked for so long, it's a bit jarring for him to come out and then last week and say that, you know, all these things about Shane, which really was kind of unprovoked and would have liked a little more of a backstory or build-up to that point. And the fact that Kevin Owens has pretended to be a babyface only to basically spit in the face of the fans to say, ha, gotcha, I'm still the bad guy. So it's going to take a little bit of time, but using the stunner certainly helps. Certainly helps. And he's a very relatable guy, organically funny, and has a connection with the fans and has, I believe, earned the respect of WWE main roster fans at this point. So that's the good. I like this rivalry with Shane and Kevin Owens, which I think we all believe it's going to end in a match at SummerSlam. I don't know what the stipulations will be or what will be on the line. We will find that out in the coming weeks, but I absolutely believe that's where they're headed, is a one-on-one match at SummerSlam. And that's fine. That's fine. I'm whatever. I've kind of just accepted the fact that Shane McMahon is apparently on equal footing as every other star on the roster that is a world-class athlete. I've just kind of succumbed to that grim reality that WWE is not going to sway from, that we're just supposed to believe that he is on equal footing. So that's the good. I like the aggressiveness in Kevin. All good stuff. A little bit what I'm not a fan of, and again, this is minor stuff. Overall, I'm enjoying the angle. Kevin Owens needs to learn how to do the stunner. I mean, just point blank. He's got it better than Cena, but he doesn't have it smooth yet. And maybe that's a little unfair because Stone Cold Steve Austin, who made the stunner famous, or the Ace Crusher, for those of you that actually want to know the original name, was done so well by Stone Cold that it when you have that comparison to Kevin Owens' version, it's a little bit unfair to Kevin because Stone Cold was just so good at it and you saw him do it so many times. Kevin has the kick, but sometimes he has a problem getting the head of the individual to grasp that nice, smooth transition from the kick to grabbing the head to the butt bump, if you will. You know, basically setting your ass on the canvas and driving the opponent's jaw into your shoulder. That's what you're supposed to be doing. So, Kevin, it's not bad, but there is room for improvement. Maybe Stone Cold can give him some lessons, I'm not sure. But it's fine for me. It's a quick-hitting move. It's one of the most popular moves, if not the most popular and well-recognized moves in the history of wrestling. I would just like Kevin to smooth it out a bit, work out the kinks, and I think he will. Shane McMahon's a good candidate to hit the stunner on. So is Dolph Ziggler, for that matter. So, I mean, really, Dolph Ziggler can sell the hell out of anything, and I like his selling of the stunner. Shane, too. So good candidates for the first victims of the stunner by Kevin Owens. So that's just one little nitpick on this whole program. But I enjoy and I respect and I'm happy for Kevin Owens and for WWE. I got to give them a round of applause here for listening and going with Kevin Owens as the focus of the show. I'm sure that just eats away at Vince McMahon's soul to have to put the guy that has a beer gut in a prominent position to carry the show. But I think he's doing it well. I think he's doing it well. And while I'm thinking of it, because I didn't mention this on last night's show, the Raw reunion show next week from Tampa, Florida, is also the site of WrestleMania this year. So perhaps we get a glimpse of seeds being planted for WrestleMania. Now, WrestleMania is, hold on, I'm actually going to count on my fingers because I don't have the number of months.
So say, okay, we have August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March, April. We have 8.5 months until WrestleMania. That's a long time. So does WWE actually have a match or two in mind? I would think so. So maybe we see seeds planted for that in the place where WrestleMania is going to take place. Now, it's not in the stadium. It's going to be in an arena, but it's the same city. And it's going to be, I'm just going to keep a close eye on that. I hope that this is not just a reunion show for the sake of a reunion show to pop a rating. Because WWE cannot be thinking that short term here. They need to be thinking, how do we sustain long term ratings? Not how do we get a quick rating, people back eyes on the product, and then tank next week, the following week. It's just silly. You need to have something that you can build from on this show. Not just one-offs, not just cutesy little one-liners or nostalgic acts, which are fun. And I love it because I grew up in the best era of wrestling, of the Attitude Era. And that's all fun and great. And we can all, you know, live 20 years ago for a night. But I would rather have real storylines be progressed here and seeds being planted for a long-term story arc. I'm a huge proponent of long-term story arcs. So we'll see if any of that happens next week. In the names that they showed, my God, Flair, Hogan, Razor. I believe I even saw Santino Marella in there. Did my eyes deceive me in that quick promo? Stone Cold Steve Austin, probably the biggest name on that show. I did not see The Rock. Interestingly enough, I did not see The Rock. But again, it's a Raw reunion. I don't know what that means. Did they just kind of come out once or twice, or are they just backstage? Probably a combination of everything is my guess. But I need it to culminate in a big angle. I need it to culminate. If you have this much star power, you need to utilize it. And the days of utilizing Attitude Era talent are waning fast. And Vince continues to go back to the well because he knows it draws ratings. But if you're going to maximize what they do and there, and the money you're paying these stars to be there, these mega stars to be there, you want to do more than just one-off stuff. You need this to be maximized for the talent that's there in whatever capacity that you can get it done. So it'd be interesting to see what the Raw reunion's all about. Okay. Moving down the line here for SmackDown Live, Daniel Bryan and Rowan, who lost the tag titles, and Daniel Bryan was advertised all night to come out and make a career-altering announcement. And that a career-altering announcement was silence, was nothing, was nothing. I don't know if he's pulling a Chris Jericho return from 2010 when he just comes out, teases like he's going to say something, puts the mic up to his mouth 400 times, And you know, cries wolf that he's going to say something and doesn't, and just walks to the back. I mean, he got a little bit of Jericho there. I don't know where this is leading. I'm honestly not sure. I would think that if it's an injury, we would have heard about it by now. I don't know what this is. I don't know. It's a little bit weird, but it has my interest. I was actually pissed off that Daniel Bryan didn't say anything, because he was advertised for so long to make a career-altering announcement several times to the show. Comes out once, twice, three times, doesn't say anything. It actually kind of pissed me off. And maybe that's the reaction that I should be feeling. Maybe that's the emotion I should be feeling, is pissed off. And maybe that's not an emotion that fans are used to having. And they say, oh, wow, that makes me so angry. Why is WWE doing this? Or no, why is WWE making this heel do this or say that? It's stupid. It pisses me off. Maybe that's what they're going for. It's not often in WWE that you feel anger towards a heel. But shouldn't you? Shouldn't you? I mean, that's what heels do. So, I don't know where it's leading. I don't think, based on what happened on SmackDown, that Rowan is going anywhere as his partner. So I don't know. I don't think it's another retirement speech or that he has another concussion. I just believe that it's a character change that will be revealed in time. His agenda. He kind of spaced out and just looked a little psychotic. So I'm intrigued. I'm on board. Let's see where it goes. All right. Moving on to another part of SmackDown Live. We got a rematch from Extreme Rules of Cesaro and Aleister Black. This was decisive. There's no question about it. You have Aleister Black, who was cutting, I think, very, very engaging, creepy promos backstage for weeks and weeks and weeks, asking someone to pick a fight with him. And it ended up being Cesaro, who lost at Extreme Rules and then lost even more decisively here on SmackDown Live. I think it was a clear message by WWE that, hey, Aleister Black's going to be a big-time player. And going through Cesaro as easily as he did, as much as I don't like the fact that he easily dispatched of him, it sends a very clear message to fans that you should pay attention to Aleister Black. And I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. You know, Cesaro has been the good soldier for WWE for 5-6 years or more now, and he just hasn't caught fire yet. And I don't think his new kind of techno space galaxy retro 80s spacesuit look is going to do him any favors. Although I did mention that I like his music, and I just do. I just like Cesaro's music. So we will see what happens here. I just don't know who Cesaro is. I don't think he knows who he is in terms of a wrestling character. And he doesn't know. There hasn't been a clear path for his character. There hasn't been a clear defined objective for who he is and or where he wants to go. And then he wears the bar mouthpiece, which got kicked out of his mouth by Aleister Black. Very symbolic. I hope that he kicked it out hard enough to have him never put it back in. Please, don't put the bar mouthpiece back in. Please. Okay. But I like where Aleister Black is going. I enjoy his character right now. I miss his backstage promos. I wouldn't mind those every once in a while. But it is a very, very, very clear message from WWE here that he easily disposed of Cesaro. Okay, moving on here to Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville versus Ember Moon and Bayley. So Sonya and Bayley started off, and Ember quickly tags and hits a running dropkick on Mandy. And then Sonya runs in, Bayley intercepts her with a suplex. Ember hits the Eclipse off the top on Mandy for the 3 count. So it's the Eclipse, which is basically a version of the Stunner, which was just kind of the move of the night. And Ember Moon wins, and Bayley and Ember have a post-match discussion with an interview. And Bayley was asked, "Who is your next challenger?" And Bayley, kind of awkwardly, in a weird, not likable way, kind of stared in the direction of Ember Moon. And Ember Moon said, "Hell yes!" And so Bayley and Ember Moon are now opponents for SummerSlam, which is, I'm okay with it. You know, I kind of expected Sasha Banks somewhere in there to pop up, and maybe she still will be in the corner of Bayley. Maybe she'll appear at SummerSlam and screw Bayley over, which I still think is coming. I'm not sure, but Ember Moon, fine. It's new. I mean, WWE management and Vince and Stephanie and Shane and Triple H all came out and said that they're going to give us new matchups because that's the problem, right? That's the problem with WWE. They haven't given us fresh matchups. It's so out of touch with what's actually the problem. But you have Eric Bischoff and Paul Heyman on the helm now for each show, respectively. So we will see, as we went into depth many times on this show. Okay. So then we get a New Day versus Elias, Randy Orton and Samoa Joe, 6-man tag, and New Day were very transparently referencing Teddy Long, who would famously make tag matches, whether it's 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, 5-on-5. At one point, I think he did a 20-man tag team match and on one of like the All-Star shows or some ridiculous thing to kind of play off the fact that he was just tag match happy. That's what Teddy Long did, and the New Day kind of a wink and nod at Teddy Long, who was very well known for making those types of matches. So Elias, Randy Orton, Samoa Joe win. That's a big deal because of how they won. And that's Randy Orton getting the RKO on Kofi Kingston for the victory. And I think that this is a good opponent for Kofi because not only are they both veterans and are friends in real life, and their styles complement one another, and they'll work safely yet stiff. And I think they could, if all the effort is put in on Randy's end, could have a 4 out of 5 star match. Do I think that's going to happen? No, because Randy's in the mode of conserve my body, conserve my body, conserve my body. I'm not laying it out there for anyone at this point in my career because I have nothing left to prove. And I understand all of that, and I respect that decision. So could they put out a barn burner? Yeah, they could. But again, I think Randy Orton is the hindrance on that happening. Nonetheless, I still think that this is a good matchup for Kofi, which I think he will continue to roll through Randy. I just don't see Randy, and I know that I'm making predictions like 3 weeks early, but I just don't see Randy Orton as champion at this point in his career. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, you built Kofi up and built Kofi up and built Kofi up to finally win the match or at WrestleMania, win the championship, he does, and then you're going to put it on Randy Orton, who is kind of symbolic of the old generation. He's a legacy star, and he's just the guy that never really reached his full potential, I believe. I don't think he ever really did, because I don't think he was motivated enough to do it and thought long term. Hey, I'm not going to put my body through hell for 4 years when I can have a 8-year career, I'm making up numbers, that would be just as lucrative and not have to kill myself with injuries and be off the road and, you know, go through surgeries and all that stuff. So I understand why Randy Orton is the way he is with his style in the ring. But I just, as good as these two are in the ring, and they're, yes, they're real friends in real life, I just have a hard time believing that this could be a 5-star classic. I hope I'm proven wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But this is a good opponent for Kofi Kingston. Kofi Kingston sells the hell out of the RKO. And so I love it all the way around. I really do. And it's not just because it's a fresh matchup. We've seen these two go to war many a time. Okay. So, but I liked it. RKO was hit out of nowhere. Here's the thing with the RKO. Randy Orton, I think, relies a little too heavily on it in terms of his promos. It always ends with the most dangerous letters in the WWE, and we all know what he's going to say. It's just he ends his promo like that every single time. And the thing is, though, with Randy, he could be the biggest heel in the company, but when he hits the RKO, people still pop because it's such a cool move. It's always out of nowhere, and it just is a money move. Very rarely do guys kick out of it, which is a big deal nowadays, that you don't have guys kicking out of finishes. And Randy Orton's finish, for the most part, has been protected. So the RKO is truly devastating. Like, when you think of the RKO, you put it in high regard because oftentimes it just takes one. Just one. And he has said that over and over and has proven that over and over. So I like that that's a protected finish. So if Kofi kicks out at SummerSlam, it's going to feel special. See? It's amazing how just simple things like that can make a difference. Okay, moving on to the Iconics versus Kairi Sane and Asuka, the Kabuki Warriors. This is not one of my highlights of the show. And I'm not going to trash this segment because I think all four women are talented and I like them individually. I like the Iconics as the women's SmackDown women's, just the women's tag team champions. I like them. I like their obnoxiousness. They go well together. I like their promos. Are they super, super good in the ring and talented in the ring? I mean, they're definitely good enough to be there, but that's not where their money is. Their money lies in their personalities, their obnoxious personalities.
And we haven't got to see that a whole lot as of late from the Iconics. I need the obnoxious previews or interviews. I need the obnoxious ringside banter. And we just aren't getting that from the Iconics as of late, of course. And I think that's what is missing from their character right now. I like them as champions. I hope that they continue to stay champions. There needs to be more focus on the women's tag team belts. There just needs to be at this point. But Kairi Sane and Asuka, outside of them both being Asian and kind of looking alike, why are they together? And what the hell is Paige doing there? That was never explained. Why does Paige have a vested interest in these two? Why does she care? We never got that explained to us as fans. I don't understand why Paige is there. And Kairi and Asuka, I mean, just because they're both Japanese, right? I don't know. But let's move on to the match. Again, it wasn't a super long match, and Peyton and Billy stayed at ringside after they got knocked to the outside to the referee's 10 count. So Asuka and Kairi win, but the titles, because the titles were on the line, the titles remain around the waist of the Iconics. Now, understand the count-out finish. Understand that you don't do a title change on SmackDown unless it's for a big reason and you're doing it to maybe a shock value. You wouldn't do a shock value with women's tag team belts. They're just not that hot right now. But what I don't understand is both women were standing there watching the Iconics get counted out. And if you get to WWE, you know the rules pretty damn well. If you're in a title match and your opponent gets disqualified or counted out, you win the match, but the title doesn't change hands. So if that's the case, and you guys have been waiting and waiting and waiting to get this chance, and you're supposed to understand the rules and regs of being in the industry that you're in, wouldn't you know that that's their ploy by, maybe a count of six or seven? You'd probably think that. And all you had to do in order to prevent that from happening was just roll to the outside of the ring. That's it. You know why? Because that restarts the count. And you could grab both of them and throw them back into the ring. I know, super complicated, but it made them look like idiots. It made Asuka and Kairi Sane look like fools. I'm sitting there going, okay, they're clearly intentionally being counted out. Why are Asuka and Kairi just standing there watching them getting counted out? They have to know that titles aren't going to change hands here if they get counted out. I don't know. Just the things like this. It's sometimes a little tough. It's tough. All right. Apollo Crews versus Andrade, by the way, that match happened. Apollo Crews won with, wait for it, WWE's favorite finish nowadays. It is the roll-up. Yeah. So Crews needed a roll-up to beat Andrade. Amazing. The guy that is three times the muscle mass of Andrade needed the roll-up to beat him. I'm not going to rant. I'm just going to keep going. But it was billed as Crews stealing the win from Andrade. How? How is that stealing the win from Andrade? I mean, Apollo hasn't exactly been featured prominently as of late. But looking at him, you have to know that he is physically superior in every way. So how is this him stealing the win? In my estimation, Apollo was actually the favorite to win this match. If you're using your brain. Okay. But I understand the perception that they're trying to put on this match. So again, the big news stories coming out of SmackDown Live: Kevin Owens stunning Shane McMahon twice, and Bryan saying pretty much nothing. Shinsuke Nakamura kind of had a weird promo too. Of he was backstage and said that he's like a storm in a bottle and the glass broke and now chaos can reign. Interesting. Okay, fine.
fine. I'm with you. I'm with you, Shinsuke. I'm with you with your rebuilding of your character. That's fine. And it looks like his very first opponent is going to be Ali. You remember, the guy that can cure alcoholism with one single glance. That man. All he has to do is just wander the streets and make eye contact with people who are drunk in alleyways, and he can cure them with just a look. Apparently, he's the second coming of Jesus Christ. I mean, I'm not against Ali. It's just, it's a very bizarre thing to do as a babyface promo to go that far into, look at how great of a human being I am, to make sure that I am caring and looking out for society and the drug addicts. All, I mean, like, does it get any more kiss ass than that? I mean, jeez, it's just, yeah, whatever. Ali is a crazy good athlete. I'm fine with him and Shinsuke locking up. Tonight was all about new matchups, because that's apparently what we all needed and what was the problem with WWE. LOL on that front. And so I'm fine with this. It's it looks like on paper anyway that these two should have a very good match together. Again, that's on paper. We will always see in execution if that's the actual case. In execution changes everything. Oh, and before I wrap things up, it does appear as if news coming through the wire that Braun Strowman has signed a 4-year deal with WWE. So Braun Strowman not going anywhere. Your dreams of him going to AEW look like they're shattered. And we have the Monster Among Men for another 4 years minimum in WWE, which puts us through 2023. We shall see what comes of that. Another little tidbit that I wanted to bring up is Natalya is getting her Raw Women's Championship match in Toronto at SummerSlam. Interestingly, is not just the timing of that, which I absolutely believe is purposeful, that she's getting a match in her home country. But more interestingly to me is going to be the reaction that Becky Lynch gets. For the hometown hero returning, what do the fans do with Becky Lynch? Do they Hulk Hogan her? Or, excuse me, Rock her from WrestleMania 18 when The Rock got booed out of the building and started his heel turn? Just some food for thought. I haven't really mulled over that one too much, but let me know what you guys think on that. Do you think this could be the turn, beginning of the turn for Becky Lynch, as the fans may side with their hometown hero rather than the somewhat lukewarm Becky Lynch? Very interesting crowd reaction for sure. But don't worry, WWE will label it as Bizarro World if they don't get the reaction that they're trying to get. Because it's just apparently a bunch of non-traditional fans hanging out in Toronto. Whatever a traditional fan is, anyway. So apparently a traditional fan to WWE is one that just eats what they're fed and is a good little fan and cheers for the people who are supposed to be cheered and boos for the people who are supposed to be booed. That's a good little traditional fan. I think that's their definition. I really believe that, which makes me want to vomit. Okay, well, guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. We'll be back tomorrow with a much longer show with my co-host, in which we'll break down every little piece of this week, including some stuff I didn't cover on SmackDown, little bit tidbits, and of course Raw and Extreme Rules and any other news that may happen in the next 24 hours. So guys, thank you for joining me. Please follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook. So just search The WWE Podcast. I will be your top result. And I'm also on every single possible podcast platform that you can think of, I think. I'm pretty sure. So thank you so much, guys. I'll be back tomorrow. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Bill and Frank Eat Pop Culture.
The Bill and Frank Eat Pop Culture Podcast, available today on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and at the website baggedboardedandboxed.com.
The entire commode shifts.
I feel like you leave the log.
I wiped, I cleaned up, I left it.
Two completely unqualified, self-proclaimed experts discuss television.
Varys drops his robe, and he's got this huge...
He's really been playing the Game of Thrones.
Movies.
James Cameron is a douchebag.
Comics.
Mystique can grow airplane wings.
What?
Well, she's a shapeshifter.
And professional wrestling.
This is not a wrestling podcast.
Lashley is just a dial tone. Like, who cares?
Dial tone.
Already many great episodes for you to binge listen to. Go catch up now. Bill and Frank, Eat Pop Culture. Go listen, download, and subscribe today.
I am wearing pants, but no underwear.